Crusher!
You're listening to Crush Performance with the Crusher, Jeff Crushell. Get in on the talent grid and follow him on Twitter at Jeff Crush. Now, here he is, the Crusher.
Okay. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Crush Performance. I am Jeff Crushell. Connor Howley's behind the glass keeping us on track. Hey, we're your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. If you have any questions, comments, smart remarks, get to us, crushperformance.com. Check out our blogs. The podcasts are there. And if you are on Facebook, check out our group. It's called The Talent Grid, just hooking everybody up with the world of high performance. We've got a really cool show today. I'm actually very excited as we're going to take a good hard look at teamwork, leadership, and performance cultures. We're joined in studio today by Yvonne Camus. Yvonne is a high performance specialist, former Eco Challenge participant, and one of North America's most trusted speakers on teamwork, performance in sport, business, and life in general. She's also the COO of the very successful and award-winning World Health Clubs in Edmonton, Alberta. Yvonne, thanks for joining us in studio today.
Thanks for having me, Jeff.
Well, I've been looking forward to this one for quite some time, and, you know, especially as we have all these major world events going on around the globe right now. We have the Euro Cup going on. We've got the Olympics right around the corner. And closer to home, we have the Major League Baseball All-Star Game right around the corner. And if we look at the standings in baseball, we have a massive disparity. We have teams 20 games back, and we have teams 3 or 4 games back. And, you know, we look at performance cultures, and that's probably an entire conversation by itself. We just got away from the Major League Baseball, the NHL, and the NBA drafts as teams pick their young talent building and planning for the future. And, you know, when we look at these teams who are, you know, looking to build and develop success moving forward, we assume there's a very well thought out, laid out plan. You know, you assume that it's going to make a lot of sense, but we all know what happens when we assume. It's dangerous. But the biggest story, I think, in sport right now, if we look what's coming around the corner, is the Rio Olympic Games and all of the distractions and stories coming out of there. Now, you're no stranger to the world of international high performance, you know, sport with the Eco Challenge. And we're going to touch on this later in the show. But, you know, one thing that I want to get to right off the top, knowing what we know about the Rio Olympics right now, if you are an athlete, parent, or coach, do you compete or not compete? We saw some of the golfers, Rory pulls out. We hear talk about Serena being careful and, you know, some of these high profile athletes that could really cripple the game. And we're very worried. And I'm personally very worried that this might be a trend we're going to see going across the way. You know, in your experiences, you know, going to all these crazy locations around the world with Eco Challenge, just looking at Rio right now, do you compete or not compete?
It's a tough question. It's a big evaluation. I think, you know, what a lot of people might not understand is just how much of your body is affected by change in environment. And going to a location that has high risk of, you know, gastrointestinal difficulties, challenges with viruses, is they're not just a day long. Like, they won't just affect that competition. You know, we had athletes coming home, 200 of the 400 athletes in Borneo came home with leptospirosis, and that's a lifelong battle once you contract a water-bred virus that, you know, is difficult to fight. And medical communities around the world are, you know, probably concerned about how it is they help these athletes get through a high level competition. Not just that, the Olympics itself, but the rest of their season or the rest of their career can be affected by that.
Yeah. So earlier today on Twitter, we sent out a poll. It was to compete or not to compete. And right now we're about 70% of the people saying no, 30% yes. Hey, let us know what you guys think. Would you compete or would you not compete? Get to us a text. You can get us on Twitter, text 101260, Twitter at Jeff Crush. Let us know. But let's talk about your experiences in this crazy world of the Eco Challenge. Let's talk about the race. You know, this was one of my favorite events. I would watch this thing left and right. I don't think there was a more difficult race on the planet that would challenge human beings to the, I guess, in every single way possible than the Eco Challenge.
I agree. I think it was brilliantly put together. Mark Burnett, you know, kind of developed the race after participating in a similar event called Raid Galois, where he failed miserably. And he was, you know, fascinated by what it took out of the human spirit to try and not just compete athletically. You know, it's a 500 kilometer nonstop race. You race 12 days without sleep and limited food. And so you're not at your best. But I think what it commands, what he discovered, was that it's not just the physical nature of the race. It's what it commands out of you mentally as an athlete and then collectively as a team, because the race itself one of the criteria for success is you have to finish together. So if one person on the team quits, the entire team's disqualified. And that component of not just taking care of yourself, but the responsibility of ensuring that your teammates are as capable at any one moment in the race, that is really what ends up causing great disruption on a team and the inability to function. And that's inevitably, like, you know, in the race itself that we were in, 80 teams started, less than 20 finished, and there were only 4 injuries. The rest was all just complete mental collapse or team, you know, team dynamic collapse, which is the demise, you know, when you see it in professional athletics all the time.
We're talking with Yvonne Gamis, ex-EO, Eco Challenge participant, COO of World Health Clubs. Well, that's interesting. 80 teams start, 20 teams finish, only 4 physical injuries.
Yep.
That tells you a lot about that experience out there. Let me ask you this. Going into this, was this something you were planning for? Was this something you were shooting for? How did you get into the Eco Challenge?
Well, I joke often about the fact that, you know, women don't trip over each other to get into this sport. If you've ever seen it, you know, it's not one that typically women are vying incredibly for. So it's a 4-person team and has to be co-ed. So quite typically, for the sake of competitiveness, the teams are made up of 3 males and 1 female. And inevitably, quite often, the females are recruited onto the team. So I was recruited. I was mountain bike racing at the time. And, you know, a lot of the racers in this type of event come from a background of either mountain bike racing, paddling, or running. And if you're a good mountain bike racer, you can do incredibly well in the sport because you cover a lot of distance in less time. So we were competing at a national level in Canada, and a spot became available. There's over 4,000 teams apply for typically 80 spots at the Eco Challenge, and we were very fortunate to have the opportunity to compete for Canada. And at the time, I will say, I always say, I'm openly willing to admit, we were naive, had no idea, you know, when we kind of discovered we were going to a 12-day 500-kilometer race. The longest race we had ever done was 36 hours. So it was, we were a little naive to what we were getting into, but it turned out successfully for us. So that was fortunate.
Yeah, well, we're talking about representing your country here now in a major international competition. And this is big deal. Like, the Eco Challenge was televised and it wasn't fluff at all. This was the real deal. I mean, you're out there and you guys are dealing with things that, well, most human beings will never even think about doing. And you guys were living it.
We were. And it was, you know, part of the component of the race was the physical nature of the environment you were put in. So Burnett intentionally sought out the most remote areas of the world. They're spectacular on television. The film coverage was incredible, but it presented unique challenges to athletes. You know, we're Canadian athletes. We're used to the Canadian environment, and you're injected into an environment where it's 44 degrees Celsius, 95% humidity. You know, what you're exposed to and what happens to your body in those conditions, you're unprepared for. You have no way of preparing for it.
So the balance of the team, let's talk about this. You guys were a rookie team going in 2000, and it was Borneo, I believe, was the location.
Borneo, Malaysia.
And to give everybody some context here, I think almost every year the Navy SEALs have had a team. In every year of the Eco Challenge, I believe, the Navy SEALs never completed the race, correct?
Correct.
And you guys, as rookies coming in, finish as a rookie team, which is incredible.
It was. Yeah, it was certainly, and after our race, we were featured in a 5-part miniseries as far as what we were able to do as a team of rookies, because typically rookies had never completed the race ever. And quite often that's because naive, as I described, but also a lack of experience, a lack of knowledge around some of the gear and the way to train, the way to sleep, and just how it is you battle not just the physical environment, but how you battle the demons that come out when you don't sleep for 3 days, and how you help your teammates get through, you know, a day of exertion when they're not at their best.
Yeah. We're talking with Yvonne Kamis now, high performance specialist, former Eco Challenge participant, and one of North America's most trusted speakers on teamwork and performance in sport, business, and life in general. I mean, a lot of these lessons cross over right for everybody, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the team dynamics here. You know, one thing, you know, we mentioned earlier, Major League Baseball, the National Hockey League, the National Basketball Association all went through their entry-level drafts, you know, looking at the new talent coming into their sports, you know, looking for a real bright future. And we know at the start of every season, every team's excited. We see what the Oilers and Edmonton are going through. You know, we look at Major League Baseball and the standings, the disparity. Teams who were all hopeful in spring training are now 18, 20 games back. There's a lot of talk about culture, team performance, and leadership in every level of sport. And I think there's a lot to learn here. Let's talk about the Eco Challenge. You guys were pushed to the limits. And how much did you have to rely on each other to get through a day, for crying out loud?
Basically, you end up relying on each other almost every minute of the day because you're never separated. You have to stay together. And what happens is the energy of the team ebbs and flows. So the teams that are highly successful in this type of racing, and I think we see it in professional teams all the time, is where leadership has to be fluid, and often it's not as much about the strength of leadership as it is about the strength of followership. So the ability to know when someone's unique ability is going to help the entire team, that's what becomes essentially important. And you're relying on each other for things as basic as getting food out of your packs, or not flipping your canoe so you don't end up stranded in the middle of the race. There's heavy reliance on each other's skills, but more importantly, you're very reliant on each other's ability to, keep each other in a place where you're more than willing to go the extra mile to get the success that you want. And when that falls apart, that's what you see. You see teams implode when they're just not willing to work hard enough for each other to be successful.
It was interesting. Last year, of course, my background with the Blue Jays and Major League Baseball, I watched the Blue Jays very, very carefully. I'm still close to them. But Alex Anthopoulos, the former GM for the Blue Jays, said something really interesting as they went on to rebuild his team. He's now with the Dodgers. And earlier in the season, we did an interview with him talking about, his time in Toronto and what he hopes to accomplish with the Los Angeles Dodgers. And he said, as a young GM, he was really enamored with the talent and, the shiny things out there, the guys who just shone and could really, individually, add something to the team. But what he soon learned as he grew and matured as a GM, in his words, is that it was more about how the team and the talent worked together. And, so we did a show last year talking about the hardest things to do in sport. We talk about boxing and we talk about Eco Challenge and, the death race in Canada and all these, the Sahara 100, I believe, and all these crazy things that people will do, the ultra marathons. And I put a different twist on it, I guess with my experience in professional football and baseball and hockey as well. Putting together a championship team might be one of the hardest things to do in all of sport because there's so many variables. And even in a team of four, I mean, the things that you have to consider to put a successful team together is almost mind-boggling.
Well, I couldn't agree more. When we came back from Borneo, we were on a high. We'd been incredibly successful, the world championships, highly sponsored, which in this sport is important because the gear is expensive, the races are expensive. And one of our teammates contracted leptospirosis in Borneo, couldn't race again after coming back from, never raced again at the world championships. So we had to recruit a new teammate. And they came out of the woodwork. They all came to us. Everybody wanted to race with us, lots of dollars behind us at that point. And it was interesting going through the process of trying to figure out who was the right person, who would be successful on a team that was already functioning well. And, we had one individual come to us, highest ranked individual racer in Canada. And in the interview with him, talking to him, he said, my theory is you take care of yourself. I'll take care of myself. Don't ask me to carry your pack. I'll take care of myself. You won't have to worry about me. And we didn't take them because, what we had discovered in the depths of the darkest nights in the middle of a 500 kilometer race was if you're not willing to help each other, you're never going to make it. And that was what, ended up affecting our decision the most.
Love it. Yeah, I absolutely love it. We're talking with Yvonne Kamis, former Eco Challenge participant and COO of World Health Clubs in Edmonton, Alberta. Well, let me ask you this. Let's just go over before we go to break. What did a day look like? What was the average day? We have 12 days of hell, I guess you could say, right? I mean, this is nonstop and it's relentless.
Yeah. So the first 3 days we didn't sleep at all. So it's like 3 days, of relentless racing. So typically you were exchanging, elements of the race. So it might have been 100 kilometers on the mountain bike and then, 8 hours in a whitewater canoe. But primarily it was racing through the jungle. You're navigating. So you're using, topographical maps and compasses. But typically after the first 3 days, we would sleep an hour and a half, 5:30 in the morning till kind of 7, wake up and then race. We were burning 19,000 calories a day during this race. So it was pretty much, just nonstop.
19,000 calories a day. That's more than my entire family eats, I think. So that's incredible.
Yeah.
Relentless. Well, let me ask you this. The things you've learned or that you learned during those incredible times out in the bush, in the jungle, testing the limits of human ability, you've crossed that over to a pretty interesting twist. into the business world and high performance for athletes and people in communities across North America.
Mm-hmm. It's been an interesting translation, I like to think of it as, of an experience that kind of, you know, people would think they could never, ever imagine themselves in, but translated into, you know, what a lot of people face every day. You know, teams in this, in the Eco Challenge had to figure out how to get along when they weren't in agreement. That was probably one of the biggest things I learned as an executive, was how it is you got people to move forward with initiative and direction and relentless commitment to a result when they were in disagreement. And that, you know, Mark Burnett's brilliant at that. He loved creating, sure, you know, animosity amongst teams. In the first day of the race, you had two teammates who were sat out, and they sat out for 15 hours while two other teammates raced nonstop across three mountains, reconnect them. You had two people who were rested, two people who were exhausted, and then you had to function together on completely different levels. And so it was a discovery of just, you know, what factors as human beings we bring to the table when we're pushing relentlessly.
Well, since the race, you have been called one of North America's most trusted speakers on teamwork, performance in sport, business, and life. When we come back from the break, let's talk about that. Let's talk about leadership. Let's talk about that teamwork, because you can apply this to your little league teams. You can apply this to your business, to your families, and certainly to your personal well-being as well. How about we hit that after the break?
Sounds great.
All right. Stick around, everybody. More Crush with Yvonne Kamis right after this.
Radio Influence strives to bring you the best in digital media broadcasting. We've got something for everybody. National sports radio talents such as the fabulous Sports Babe and Rich Herrera. Huge podcasts like the Don Tony and Kevin Castle Show. And the MMA Insiders with Jason Floyd and Sam Kaplan. New shows like Beyond the Badge with Vincent Hill. Entertainment shows like LOL with Nancy Alexander. And shows that'll make you think, like Dangerous Conversation with Scott Ledger.
We've got you covered.
You can find all our shows on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.
Find out what it takes to be a top performer. Get the Crush blog, podcast, and newsletter at CrushPerformance.com. Now, back to the show.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Jeff Grishel here, the con man behind the glass. We are in studio with Yvonne Kamis, ex-Eco Challenge athlete, business expert, speaker, professional speaker, and COO of the World Health Clubs in Edmonton, Alberta. Thanks again for coming in studio.
Always a pleasure.
We were just finishing a great conversation about your time with the Eco Challenge and how demanding that was. But there's a lot of lessons to be learned there, not just in terms of what you guys went through as a team, but watching the other teams operate, but just from a human nature standpoint as well. This race pushed the limits of human ability and tenacity. It's a survival game out there. Talk about this. You know, you've been called one of North America's most trusted speakers in teamwork and performance. Talk about, you know, your transition. Were you planning to be a world-class speaker on teamwork and performance at the start, or is this something that just evolved from all the experiences that you had?
It definitely wasn't my plan at all. I would say professional speaking was the last thing I thought would be happening in my career. But what happened with Eco Challenge is quite typical with athletes. You know, we had to go out and collect sponsorships to try and assist us through the financial burden of racing at the level we were racing. And typically, almost every athlete in that situation ends up being obligated to their sponsors for presentations when they return. And so I wrote a presentation, just simply wrote it about the challenge of teamwork in adverse environments and intense environments, and created, you know, just out of almost organic obligation, some real insights into what happens to people when they're in situations where success doesn't look likely or pressures are high and they have to work collectively.
I wonder how much that, what you just said, correlates to the everyday life of our listeners out there. I mean, it sounds exactly like a breakfast table discussion between a husband and wife, or a young couple, or a daughter and a father or a mother. That sounds like an everyday conversation for people going out to the workforce, entrepreneurs or business people. It's a high pressure life out there.
It is. And I think, you know, you hit the nail on the head. I have these kind of conversations with my twins. I have 21-year-old boys in university. And, you know, we're having those dinner table conversations about how do you keep your nose to the grindstone? How do you keep the effort, you know, cultivated when their life, I think at this time, feels like a massive struggle. And I think we see that in a lot of our kids, you know, in these times of how can we help them? And so I think figuring out, you know, how it is you can communicate, you know, the challenge that exists you know, not just in business, but in life in general is helpful.
So I was a strength coach with the Blue Jays for a good number of years. And we were in a homestand. Carlos Tosca was our manager at the time. And I walked into his office after a game. We were just going to review. I was going to go over injury rehab. We had a couple guys getting close to coming back. And I walked in and I saw this bright red book on his desk. And just on the spine of the book, it said good to great. I go, hey, what is that all about? He says, Crusher, you got to read this book. I go, what is it? He goes, it's a business book. I said, a business book? He says, read it. So we are about to go on a 12-day road trip. I crushed that book. And once I started reading it, I crushed that book probably in about 5 days. It's by Jim Collins, and it's about these businesses. They picked 21 businesses, 11 businesses that were successful and outperformed the market, and 11 businesses that fell off. They all started in similar industries. They had like pharmacies, metal fabricating companies, all different kinds of companies, but they all started with similar resources, similar opportunities. And they went and looked at the long-term performance of them and said, why did these guys succeed and why did these guys fail? And it's a fascinating read, and it really helped me as a young professional in high performance sports, helping athletes understand what it takes to, you know, achieve and be great in the world of high performance sport, because there is no pressure like, you know, professional sports. And the one interesting thing, Yvonne, that came across out of that book to me was the interviews with the CEOs of the successful companies. The number one reason that every one of them, without question, said was the main factor in their success was the people, the right people in the right job. Isn't that fascinating?
I mean, I think it's dead on, and we all realize it without sometimes truly understanding how it is the effect of different people, you know, impact the performance overall. And that whole concept of good to great was expanded even further to a study where they looked at individual people within organizations and why some individual people within successful organizations have different levels of success themselves. So you have that outstanding salesperson on your team, and you have someone who's, you know, not as good or mediocre, and yet they've had the same training, they have the same mentor, they have the same boss, values, structure. And so why can one person be more successful than another in the same environment? And what they drilled it down to were two distinct characteristics that highly successful, sustainable, successful people had that they're less successful coworkers didn't have. And the one was they practice with the intention of improving. Mm. So, you know, I think when you're looking at the people factor on a team, often leaders look to like who's doing their job with the intention of creating not just results, but personal improvement. How do they look to help? How do they look to raise the bar for themselves and their colleagues or their teammates? And the second criteria or second characteristic the successful group had was a relentless commitment of effort. So even with failure, even with adversity, even with setbacks, even with, you know, and you see it after success, people who have massive success and then take their foot off the gas. So those two key characteristics in individual people can, when you can see that demonstrated early on, can be an indicator of, you know, the ability to contribute to success.
We're talking with Yvonne Camus in studio, a former Eco Challenge participant and COO of the very successful and award-winning World Health Clubs in Edmonton, Alberta. Well, it's fascinating. You know, in the last segment, you talked about adding on a new member to your Eco Challenge team, a very talented top athlete in his own regard that didn't fit into your team. And, you know, if we look at the sporting world, this is so real. I mean, this is a concept that I think a lot of organizations don't quite grasp yet, but certainly in business, how important is this? The parallels between the business world and the sporting world are so fantastic in my mind that there's a lot to be learned from each, and there's a lot to share as well.
Yeah, and I think what you see often there is like high performers, almost early on, it takes a little bit of ego to get yourself to a level of success.
Sure.
And that you can see that in young athletes. You can see it, and you certainly see it now in young business people, that you have to have a certain degree of belief in your own ability. You have to be able to push your own qualities forward a little bit to get yourself someplace. But then it almost has to blossom into how it is. Can you be of service to the other people on your team? And that switch has to go off. And then when it doesn't, you see how those people who were able to create early success just can't cultivate it or sustain it once they have to perform amongst other high performers.
Let me ask you this. You know, we focus so much on developing individuals. Let's talk about the sporting world. And I think the exact same thing happens in the business world. There's no doubt. We spend so much time on building the expertise of individuals. And once that expertise is accomplished and they're fairly functional or high performing even, then they have to integrate them into a team setting, because I don't think there's anything that exists out there that isn't a team setting. Even if we look at the world of golf, the individual sports, tennis, golf, there's a massive team around these athletes.
Yep.
And not only that, they have to work within their league and with their organizations, you know, to help everybody be successful. So we spend so much time developing these incredible abilities for the individual. Do you think we spend enough time in helping them integrate or become team players? Because that's a different ballgame, I'm going to guess.
I think it is. And I think early on in, you know, in a youthful athletic career, the capacity of comprehension probably isn't there. There's probably an ideal point of development where there should be more focus on that. And, you know, I think about even my athletic career. I mean, you know, you look at mountain bike racing, you're basically racing against your teammates for the podium.
Right.
Like if you're trying to win the race on the podium, you're racing your teammates too. And, you know, there are certain ways that you're collective in the effort. Like you might cheer each other on, or you're wearing the same uniform, you have the same coaching and, you know, guidance on the course, but essentially you're trying to beat your teammate to a spot. And then, you know, you move to an eco challenge race where the concept, you know, in mountain bike racing, the concept of winning is being, you know, you serve your team by getting on the podium. When you get into eco challenge, you have to figure out how it is you're of service to the rest of your team being successful, because you can't leave them behind. You can't leave them in your dust. And I think that's the same. You see it in business so much, is that, you know, one component of any business, one department, one person, if their success is at the expense of something else in the business, ultimately it's a failure.
We're talking with Yvonne Camus, a former Eco Challenge participant, speaker on teamwork and performance, and of course the COO of World Health Clubs in Edmonton, Alberta. You know, one thing that I think is really interesting is you can take an individual and immerse them into a culture and watch them adapt. Environment and culture might be as powerful in terms of what a human being can do as their internal genetics, or, you know, their experiences leading up to, you know, being immersed into a culture. And I think, you know, a lot of this comes from leadership. You know, we used to talk to a great sports psychologist, Harvey Dorfman, who was a good friend of mine, passed away years ago. And he said, you know, Jeff, organizations, they're like a spinal cord. They're built from the top down. And, you know, when I was younger and heard him say, I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, okay. But it's really true. If we look at the sporting world, for example, great ownership, okay, great management, GM, administration, great coaching, and then right into great players, and then great support staff. It comes from the top down. And I think that as much as we have to hold our employees and our workers on the ground responsible, our employees have to hold everybody above them responsible as well. And there we start getting a pretty powerful culture going.
It's true. And you know, you see it in athletics where you have an incredibly talented individual athlete and they're put on a team where they fail miserably. And, you know, they're not given the leadership, the guidance. They're not developed in it with a culture around what it is to help everybody, you know, create the success that they're capable of. And the same holds true. It's true in, you know, in business. And certainly, you know, I've seen it in my time at World Health. What we've discovered is our ability to properly onboard an employee starts at the top, you know, and creating the opportunity for them to be a willing employee depends on how committed you are, you know, as the COO and as their manager, to helping them with that.
Yeah. And I think that's really, that really crosses over into almost every aspect of life. You could apply what we're talking about right now to your household, your kids, your classroom, if you're a teacher, your little league team, if you're a coach, certainly as a business owner, and certainly as a high performance manager, team owner. So important to develop that environment. Let's talk quickly about teamwork though, because really when it comes down to it, a team has to work together in order to accomplish a goal. We're the sum of our parts, so to speak. And it's important to get the right parts in place. Do you have any advice? I mean, you've gone through so much with the Eco Challenge and now in the business world, putting the right teams together. Any experiences you share with the people you talk with in terms of, you know, getting that team together or team dynamics?
Well, I think one of my big discoveries from Racing Eco Challenge that I share in my presentation is that you're best to take an approach with your teammates of reminding yourself of who they are when they're at their best. Because what we certainly saw at Eco Challenge is that there's times in the race where every single person in that race demonstrates their worst characteristics. You know, we had no food, no water, racing without sleep, and you're racing nonstop. You're not in conditions that are going to bring out your best personality. And it was quite the discovery to realize, you know what, you're better off reminding yourself of who someone is when they're performing at their best, and then how it is you can, you know, contribute back into that, then remind them of who they are when they're at their worst. And when you kind of end up, you know, having conversations and interactions around people's worst performance, there's just no, you know, clear, easy way out of that that ends up being productive. So certainly the discovery of remind yourself of who your teammates are when they're at their best. And then also, I think in that race itself, beforehand, I was, you know, the executive vice president of a company, and I was one of those people that was like, here's the bar, you know, jump over it, above it, but don't stay below it. And what the race taught me more than anything, I was racing with world-class athletes who all crumbled at some point over those 12 days, was the art of compassion and the understanding that on any given day, someone's spirit can be broken. And that discovery for me was massive, to have the capability to be compassionate to non-performance and then, you know, swing it more into a positive state. The responsibility we have to, you know, be compassionate at times to people, I think, as leaders is I discovered was ultimately important.
Interesting stuff. You know, just as context before we go to break, you guys were, I think, maybe the first rookie team to finish, mm-hmm. and yep. maybe the only rookie team. Yep. The only rookie team so far to ever finish. Navy SEALs have participated in this race from day one. Their team has never finished. I'm feeling a lot safer sitting in the studio with you right now, knowing that you kicked the crap out of the Navy SEALs. Great stuff. Well, hey, one of our questions that we have right now, as we talk about these world-class events, world-class performance, the Rio Olympics are right around the corner, and they're facing some major hurdles and distractions as well. We see athletes getting ready. Every country around the world is having their Olympic qualifiers to see who's going to be representing that flag in Rio, and those athletes are going for it. Hopefully they're staying on track and staying focused, but there's a lot of distractions. The question of the day is, would you compete or would you not compete, knowing what we know about the Olympics? When we come back, we're going to talk to Yvonne about that. And we're also going to talk about, you know, dealing with adversity in the workplace and how you can overcome it. There's strategies out there that you can use. So stick around. We'll be talking with that after the break on Crush Performance.
Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. If you're a serious athlete, a weekend warrior, parent, or coach, join us each week as we investigate the latest trends and research coming out of the sport performance world. We'll visit with top athletes, coaches, and sports scientists to keep you on the cutting edge and to find out what it truly takes to achieve human maximum performance. You can visit us online at crushperformance.com, and Crush Performance Radio with me, Jeff Kerschell, can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and at Radio Influence.
This is Crush Performance. If you have questions, comments, or smart remarks, write to us at crushperformance.com.
And welcome back to Crush Performance. Jeff Kerschell here, the con man behind the glass, keeping us on track. Hey, we're your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. Questions, comments, smart remarks, get to us, crushperformance.com. Our blogs, podcasts, our hookups to the world of performance are all there. If you are on Twitter, at Jeff Crush, get to us. I ran a poll today asking people if they were a coach, athlete, or parent of an athlete, knowing what we know about the Rio Olympics, would you compete? Right now, the poll sits at about 70-30. 70% of the people saying no, 30% saying yes. Let us know what you think. Get to us. 10-12-60 is the text number. We're joined in studio by Yvonne Camus. Yvonne, thanks for sticking around all day today. It's been a fantastic conversation.
Thanks for having me.
Yvonne, for everybody who's just tuning in, is a former Eco Challenge participant. She's one of North America's most trusted speakers on teamwork and performance. And she's also the COO of the very successful and award-winning World Health Clubs in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. Now, if I were to ask you, with your experience in the Eco Challenge, I don't think there's a tougher competition. I really don't. Rain or shine, there's no rainouts for you guys.
No.
You guys are going no matter what in some of the most treacherous, unsuspecting, unrelenting environments on the planet. Knowing what we know about Rio right now, if you were an athlete, would you compete or would you not compete?
I personally would not compete. I mean, we had challenges that came with racing in remote environments that you try your best to be prepared for, combat against when you're in the middle of competition. But after the World Championships, we were invited to a spectacular world-class race and didn't attend, even though it was a fully paid ride to go, simply because the concern for illness was so high that when you've been that sick from that type of exposure, you realize just how much it's going to affect you for an upcoming season in the future.
You had a teammate that came down with a waterborne bacteria, I believe.
Yeah.
And it was dangerous.
Serious. Yeah. In the middle of the race, we actually had one teammate who was unconscious for 8 hours because of exposure.
In
the middle of the race. He finished the race. He was terribly ill afterwards, but a second one of our teammates actually contracted leptospirosis, waterborne virus that affects your liver, and upon return to Canada was hospitalized for 19 days and was never able to compete, you know, at that level again.
Yeah, so this is a tough question. We've got a really mixed reviews on the text question. You know, some people are saying would most definitely go once in a lifetime for most, and that's true. One Olympics is a very special thing. These people that get to compete in multiple Olympics, wow, that's all I have to say. I love the Olympics. It's one of my favorite things, winter or summer. I look forward to them every 2 years. I absolutely love everything about them. I love the preparation. I love the real life drama. I love everything that goes on around them. And this one, unfortunately, is plagued. It's not, and this isn't like Sochi or some of the other ones we've had where, you know, maybe construction's a little bit behind or we're worried about traffic from the airport or lack of hotel rooms. We're talking about public health issues. In terms of polluted water, we're talking about crime. The police came out today and said, the police of Brazil, of Rio, says, we can't protect you. We don't have enough resources or people. There's a lot of big things going on down there. So, you know, for the athletes who are right now getting ready to defend or compete to represent their countries at these Olympics, we just need them to stay focused on their job of doing the best they can in the qualifiers and deal with what comes down the road. But this is a real tough decision for a lot of these athletes.
And I can fully comprehend the dilemma they're in, because that desire to compete at the highest level in your sport, and as you said, may only come around once. And that's where, you know, my heart goes out to them, because I think there's almost more responsibility on the organizers to ensure this type of safety for athletes is better managed and monitored, because athletes will go to extremes to, you know, have the opportunity that the Olympics provide. And the temptation, I think it's going to be very high for athletes to go, because it is the opportunity that is the Olympics. And so the ability to protect them from that, I think, lies on some other shoulders.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we'll be talking about the Olympics as it gets closer. As of today, we're 30 days out from the opening ceremonies. So we'll be following this closely, and we'll also be looking at all the great stuff, Crush style, that goes on around the Olympics, the new technologies coming out, the training, and some of the great performances as we head into the games. Adversity, Yvonne, though, exists everywhere. In our daily lives, in our work lives, in our own personal pursuit of sport, whether you're a recreational athlete, whether you're somebody trying to lose weight down at World Health, or whether you're a young bodybuilder trying to work your way up to compete, it doesn't matter what your interests are. There's adversity everywhere. And dealing with adversity is a pretty interesting thing.
It is. And as you said, it is everywhere. And I think, you know, most of us have overcome more adversity than we even realize, you know, just, you know, the fact that the human race has survived as long as it has demonstrates the capacity we have to figure out how it is we overcome the obstacles that, you know, lie in front of us. And I'm one of those people who believe we are uniquely gifted to overcome the obstacles we personally encounter in our lives. And the reality of accepting that adversity is not going to disappear. You know, hardship doesn't discriminate, whether it's, you know, athletic endeavors that you have to overcome when you're training, or, you know, the challenges that present themselves even to businesses today of developing a successful, you know, business in today's environment. So, you know, I think the realization where everybody around you is facing some sort of adversity.
You know, it's interesting. There's this new, so I don't want to say it's new. It's not new. Variable differential training's been around for ages. There's a great German sports scientist from years and years ago, from the early 30s, early 1900s even, who started looking at the concept of differential training in the workforce. He started looking at blacksmiths. He started looking at how these guys swing the hammer and how these guys get such great results. I mean, they're crafting these beautiful swords and tools that we use every day. And he noticed that the swing of the hammer was never quite the same, yet we're getting the same result. And he started looking at how the environments can change what we do, but we can still get the job done. And it turned into this whole concept called differential training. And there was an idea or a thought that perfect practice makes perfect. And you might want to say that, you know, in my experiences, there's no such thing as perfect in the world of high performance sport or life in general. It's never perfect. So what we've done is we've moved away from trying to create these beautiful, perfect scenarios to practice and learn in. And we just start throwing crap at everybody, making it so difficult and diverse within reason, of course, but to overcome and make the real thing look easy almost. And that almost becomes a mind game.
It does. And I think that exposure to having to think on your feet and, you know, evolve a process that's going to create success. That's what it actually was part of the magic of Eco Challenge was that I don't know if most people realize the race itself is kept a complete secret from the athletes. So all you know is the start point of the race and what sports you're going to compete in. You have no idea how often you're going to be riding your bike, how far you'll ride your bike, how far you might have to swim. And that level of uncertainty often, you know, what it does is it causes you to have to expand your ability to think on your feet. And that is what I think when there were teams that created success in that environment, it was teams that and individuals that didn't close themselves off to only having one path to success. It was that opening of the understanding that you cannot figure it all out. You will not know in advance how to be successful. So the best you have is to rely on the knowledge that you've acquired and the things that are available to you to think your way through.
Fantastic stuff. Well, you know what? I wanted to get into the world of World Health Clubs here in Edmonton because we know you guys are helping a lot of people achieve their goals. Maybe we'll have to reserve that conversation for another day because you guys are doing some fantastic work there.
Gladly.
But I'm telling you right now, it's been a pleasure to have you on to talk about this idea of teamwork performance and to look at the adversity and the things you learned at the Eco Challenge and to bring it to the airwaves and your speaking and all the people you help. I want to thank you for coming in today.
Thanks, Jeff.
Awesome stuff. So, hey, if you guys have any questions, get to us at crushperformance.com. Next week, listen, the Midsummer Classic is upon us. Major League Baseball's All-Star Game. We're talking baseball. We're going to look at the standings, and we're also going to talk about performance cultures coming off of today's conversation. Why are some teams being successful or having so much success? And why are some failing so miserably? Next week on Crush Performance, we'll talk to you then.